welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Charles Torrey, in for Dan, who's in Vegas again.
Is he in Vegas?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Hockey.
I didn't realize that.
Vegas.
Nice.
Good luck,
Makes
Daniel.
Makes sense. Yeah, because hockey and Vegas usually go together. Let's
totally.
Go to the middle of the desert to play hockey.
Totally, man. Crank on hockey, drink, crank on hockey in the morning. That's what he does.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds good. Well,
have
thanks,
fun, Danny.
Thanks for being here. All right.
Thank you. My pleasure, man.
Top story is Visual Studio 2013 update for CTP2.
Great.
Is now available for download. So this is cool. Some new features in here. There's also some new things that have come out in conjunction with this release. For example, Team Explorer Everywhere 2013 Update 2. I don't know. I'm not quite sure why they're a couple of update versions behind, but I guess that's just a different cadence.
Yes.
So Team Explorer Everywhere is the add-in for Eclipse that allows you to connect to Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Online. They've done a bunch of work in this release to make it easier to work with Git projects.
Great.
So that's cool. Also, Visual Studio Tools for Unity is available as a free download. It's available for Visual Studio 2013, 2012, and 2010.
Great.
So no word yet if they're backporting that to Visual Basic 6. I don't know.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, sorry.
And now you can browse large C++ code bases and not have the IDE hang. So great job, C++ team.
Yeah, wearing your going native.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down to. Yeah. I have a bunch of these, by the way. Didn't give them all out.
Yeah.
So, hey, nice. It's nice having free shirts, man.
Yeah,
and it's true.
Don't have to do laundry anymore. Excellent. All right, so check that out. Next story. This is the update Visual Studio 2013 Update 3 version of my ALM virtual machine. So a lot of people like this virtual machine because what I try to do is package up a bunch of sample projects and sample data.
Great.
And I now have 25 hands-on labs and demo scripts you can go through as part of that experience.
Great.
Because if you want to try to learn TFS, it's hard to do until you actually have some data in the system. Well, how do I get the data in the system? So you basically, you can download this and you can essentially drop into a project that's mid-flight. You can go through a set of exercises to learn how the various capabilities in TFS and Visual Studio light up as part
of
that experience.
Man. And how long have you been doing that, by the way?
Too long.
Right,
I think I've probably been shipping this virtual machine for like 8 years now.
Amazing, man.
And people
very
call
helpful.
It, yeah, they call it the Brian Keller virtual machine, which
great.
Is not a name I gave it, but it just kind of developed and stuck.
BKVM.
Yeah.
BKVM.
Yeah. I need to make some t-shirts.
Do it. Yeah. BKVM.
So, .NET MicroFramework.
Yes, for those people who remember what the .NET MicroFramework actually is, nice to see that it's continuing to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, that you can use Visual Studio 2013 to program with it. So if you're programming controllers and doing stuff where you want to have a MicroFramework so you don't have gigantic amounts of memory consumption, you're on constrained devices, that's why they built it. And other thing that's really interesting is it's open source. I mean, I'm old school, haven't really been following it along, but that's good to know.
Yeah.
It's definitely a fully open source project.
Yeah, and it's I'm not a pricing and licensing expert, but from what I read on their blog, it sounds like as a hardware manufacturer,
mm-hmm.
If you want to use the .NET Micro Framework, you can do so for free without paying any sort of royalties. So it's a really nice platform to include. I saw a smart watch actually that came out on a Kickstarter project last year that Hanselman was pointing to that actually ran the .NET Micro Framework. So
great.
You can do some cool stuff with
it. You can, and you can do it in C Sharp and be very productive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Definitely. So new update for Windows Phone. I don't know, Charles, are you on the preview?
I am. I have the update right ready to install.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm on the preview channel as well. I installed the preview that came out maybe in August, I want to say.
Mm.
And had some nice features in it, but I gotta say it was a little buggy. So, you know, I drained my battery a bunch and I would find myself in situations where my phone would just kind of, you know, crash and kick me back to the main screen, which is what you sign up for when you go on a preview, you know, release channel. But now they've got a new release that's out there that supports a lot of bug fixes and it's I think it's available to all devices. I got it last night.
Great.
So
excellent, man.
Yeah.
I have one waiting. So
yeah, it's probably installing right now or
totally.
Ready for you to kick it off.
Ready for me to do it.
Yeah. So speaking of phone development.
Yes.
What's
so
this all
speaking
about?
Of phone development now. So actually I've been doing a fair amount of development recently. One of the things I've been playing around with is the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through the whole process
mm-hmm.
because when I initially install VS 2013,
mm-hmm.
I don't do the 12 gigabyte experience.
Okay.
Right? I do what I need. So check mark, removed, yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then
yep.
minimal install.
Yeah.
So if you want to do Windows Phone programming, you have to install multiple SDKs. So
mm-hmm.
you have to install the 8.1, which actually will install with 2013 by default.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you're going to want the 8.0.
Mm-hmm.
because that's what most apps are written in. They have a nice Silverlight framework, which is still supported in 8.1, by the way. You don't have to use Windows XAML and WinRT. So moral of the story is, in order to get this all set up and comfortable, go ahead and download the SDK for Windows Phone 8, and then download the new emulators after you do that, and then make sure that you get Hyper-V support working on your dev machine. So you might have to do some stuff at the BIOS level. Typically you don't, but I did on my setup. And so just be prepared for that kind of stuff. Once you're done, it's killer, man. Like I've been just, you know, write code, check things out, send to the phone. Oh, nice, debug. It's it's a nice experience. Blend is good for non sort of UI programmers. Blend is evolving as well, so it's easy to make some nice color displays. There's also another thing we're going to talk about.
Yeah, let's actually move right along to that. So moral of the story is follow Nick Landry's post, which talks about all the ways to set up your machine. And then let's talk about the prototyping experience.
Yeah, so Sketchflow is something I remember we announced in the last mix. I think it was Mix 09, or was there a Mix 10? Doesn't matter.
Something like that.
But Sketchflow is cool. It's like really fast prototyping, UI prototyping tool. And now this person has created sort of a package that you can use that has a bunch of support for messing around with various configurations and types of phones for basically building prototypes for your phone without using Blend. So check it out. That's what I'll say to that. If you want to quickly prototype a UI and then actually see it work on emulators, rock and roll, man.
Excellent. Sounds good. So we've talked a bit in the past on Channel 9 about the new Azure Preview Portal, and it's a really awesome experience. I've done a bunch of playing around with it, and you can manage your apps in these things called Azure Resource Groups, so you don't have just a collection of individual resources for you to go reverse engineer and figure out, now, did that website go with this database? But you can really package everything together as a resource group, which makes it easier to manage that throughout the entire DevOps lifecycle. So we've seen all what the portal can do. Justin Beckwith is a friend of mine on the Azure team, and he actually goes through a really great blog post that talks about how do we actually build this thing? What was the journey like as we started to build this experience? And they use the entire alphabet soup of all the JavaScript libraries that are out there, and it's really really interesting because their UI is very different, I would say, from traditional UIs you may have played with. It has a side scroll experience. They have this concept of blades and tiles. It's very similar to what you get on the phone, but it's the first time I've seen anyone do something this rich in a browser application. So so go check it out if you want to learn how they built this. I think it's a really cool geeky article.
A little history on the history. When I started at Microsoft, the Chris Owens, who leads the UI sort of UX design team that actually implements and designs a lot of the stuff on the HTML side, on the front end. He was the guy I worked with back way early on. He had just gotten out of high school. Was sort of this crack programmer, like web dude, back in the day before there were a lot of web dudes. And it's nice to, so I want to make a shout out to Chris, because he's aged as well at Microsoft. And so, yeah, really cool work. Pretty phenomenal amount of HTML and JavaScript going on. CSS.
Excellent. All right. So reactive extensions, generally. RX.
So I guess, if you watch this and you get through the video, and it's a good video, just kind of you can skip through the introduction a little bit. He's well known for using reactive extensions. I think a lot of the information that exists on the internet around RX can tend to be too focused on the implementation details, right? Because it's actually, it's a lambda calculus, man. It's like, it's excellent work that, you know, some very smart people had developed, still rocking out in the real world. By the way, Netflix uses RX.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, actually.
On the JavaScript implementation. Eric Meyer has been really, really busy. It was nice to catch up with him again. People saw the video on Channel 9 that
he's
was shot in real time.
He's consulting now, right?
Yes.
Doing reactive extensions consulting.
Totally.
External to Microsoft.
Adding them to Java, adding them to Scala, and making money helping companies incorporate it into their workflow.
Right, and of course, Bart DeSmet's still working on it internally.
He is. So Bart DeSmet's working on, and you saw that video,
on the Bing team.
Cortana,
Bing team, right? Oh,
yeah.
Cortana as well. Yeah.
So Cortana
yeah.
uses a lot of RX. So when I say Cortana, do this, mm-hmm. remind me this. That's
it actually
RX.
Sends a text message to Bart DeSmit, and yeah. he in turn does it for
yeah.
you. Yeah.
And he moves things like this. He goes, yeah, that, this one, that one. So, anyway, it's good to watch this video. So yeah. if you've never heard of RX, you don't know much about it. Maybe you're afraid to use it because it does have some kind of conceptual
academic you know level to it.
Well, it's just not as simple as blah blah blah, but the right. syntax isn't that complicated. So right. just if you need what RX provides, yeah. I highly recommend it.
You keep looking at that camera. We don't actually use that camera on this show.
So let me ask you something.
Yeah, we're
just
these
cameras
camera
are what did somebody win the lottery, man? I thought Channel 9 was in like financial dire straits.
It's grown up since you started it, you know, 10, 15, how many years ago was that?
A long time ago.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. So they've grown up since then.
They
yeah.
have.
So
we have
moving right along. What is this? This is speaking of, you know,
super cool,
expensive technology, right?
I like it. Well, I mean, the cool thing about this is there's a whole group of people out in the real world, and typically mm-hmm. as sort of enterprise type developers or people that are working for companies solving problems with code. Mm-hmm. There's a whole world out there of people that just do creative. They're artists who use code and programming right. and tools to build interesting installations and experiences.
Like our friend Rick Barraza.
Yes, so he's a big, Rick was actually involved with us.
Cool.
He was a creative consultant, and actually Rich also codes. Hmm. So he helped them a little bit with the implementation, which is also Microsoft OpenTech mm-hmm. and some other people, and Stimulant, which is a company, a partner we work with. They do a lot of artistic installations. They're mm-hmm. really good guys. So the cool thing about this is it shows when you blend software, hardware, and creativity mm-hmm. into a sort of a concrete experience.
Right.
And people love this because it shows the power of software and hardware working together that's not just, you know, there so you can write code like a right. IDE or whatever, some transactional system. So it's really eye-opening, and I love seeing things like this. So kudos to everybody involved because
yeah.
it's like bringing code and art together with hardware is beautiful. It's got
yeah.
Kinects, about 5 computers, cameras. And it's actually a really interesting use of Kinect. I like it. I mean, it's kind of weird to think that I'm dancing.
Right.
And you're behind the cube, say, and it's really cool that, but I mean, I think I'm old school, man, right? But I think the whole point of this was to show
right.
that you could transform the person dancing into weird shapes.
Right.
It's trippy.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the people element there. I actually, a few years ago, had a chance to work with a guy, or I had a few meetings with a guy, I shouldn't overstate it, the guy who worked on Lord of the Rings, and he invented the software that they used to control Gollum. And he actually, or Smeagol, if you will,
nice.
And he actually he's got his start, as I recall, drawing comic books, and then he got into computer programming, and so he's one of these people who can bridge the left brain, right brain divide, super valuable, super rare, but
totally.
You know, obviously, you know, beautiful things like Lord of the Rings were able to come out of that.
Totally.
So it's pretty neat.
The other thing I would just say before we end, I mean, I would argue that creativity is more like a fractal than sort of like designers are creative and developers are just sort of more engineering focused mm-hmm. and linear, because when you are trying to solve a problem, whether it's abstract or not, mm-hmm. Everybody has to be creative. So programmers are amongst the most creative people I've ever met. The interesting thing here is that you have people that are very right-brained, mm-hmm. but aren't afraid to dig down and say, in some cases, even use high-level C++ libraries to build their art
right.
without being hardcore programmers.
Right.
But because it's abstract enough, they're able to take care of that part by building their implementation. But, you know, programmers are creative people, and I've seen some, let's be honest, just like bad art, I've
yeah.
seen some bad code
yeah, sure.
and some beautiful, beautiful code yeah. and more importantly, like design.
All right. Well, this is turning into a going deep episode, so
it's
let's get
not.
Back
let's
to
go.
But
you, hey,
news.
You invited me, man.
I did. So this is your pick of the week.
It is. What time is it on Titan right now?
On Titan? I have
yeah.
no idea what time it is
and
in
what's
Titan.
The date?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Thursday. Last Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a funny tweet by Joe Wright, clearly an Englishman. Maybe he could be Australian. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The way he spells favor, I'm making
and realized.
So good point. So, yes, it's funny. I thought that was very funny. And it is an interesting problem because we're very Earth-centric,
mm-hmm.
which isn't surprising.
Right.
We're Earthlings.
Right.
So universal time doesn't mean universal time.
Yeah.
But then again, if I'm sending a Mars rover to Mars, and
mm-hmm.
I'm interested as an Earthling,
mm-hmm.
Because to me, time is relative to myself. So right. I'm going to move the thing around on Thursday, Earth time. Mm-hmm. What time it is actually on Mars doesn't really matter
sure.
because it's 3 p.m. I'm in California.
Right.
I'm going to press a button. It's going to get there at some amount of time and things are going to happen. So we have that kind of math figured out. But this is cute to think about.
Well, I mean, those types of conversions become really important once
yes.
you colonize Mars, and all of a sudden it's not just a robot, but you're actually saying, hey, let's set up a link meeting so that we can discuss this such and such.
Totally.
I need to know what time those people are going to be awake.
So I forgot my brother's birthday again, man. He's on the Martian colony. I'm sorry, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. Cortana just reminded me, but the timing's wrong. I'm going to send a note to
Mark.
But
he's 10 years old because the Mars, or maybe he's 100 years old.
But
I don't
actually,
know.
I do want to make a shout out to my brother because he turns 50 years old tomorrow.
Oh, wow. So what's his name?
David
Torre.
Love, man.
Excellent. All right. So my pick of the week, speaking of people that have been at Microsoft a long, long time, Larry Osterman, he's got to be in the top 20,
yes.
I think, in terms of tenure. And I thought this was a great idea by Larry Larson and crew to go say, hey, Larry Osterman, let's go over to the Microsoft archives. Mm. I don't know if you've been there before. I had the opportunity to explore this with my brother, Daniel,
cool.
Last year. And it's amazing. It's like that last scene in Indiana Jones and Lost Ark where you just see row after row after row of archives of they've got every piece of software we ever shipped.
Wow.
In a box, so I was able to find the Visual J Sharp box that I actually helped
design
back in 2002.
Dude.
It was really cool. But Larry goes through and he tells stories about what was it like to be at Microsoft 30 years ago and some of the competitions we had against, you know, Novell and how we, you know, Land Manager and that sort of thing that that came about and the different t-shirts and pillowcases. And I don't want to spoil it, but you should go watch this video. It's a two-part series. Mm. Really excellent episode of Ping.
So, awesome, man.
Yeah.
Hey, and one last thing I'd like to say for the developers out there. One of the things Larry worked on recently was a background downloader service in Windows.
Bits?
Not Bits.
Okay.
It's based on, it's got some WinINet stuff, obviously, that it's working with. But what it does is, as a developer, I can be explicit with intention to download a bunch of images to the cache before my app even runs.
How does that work?
Because there's a service running that looks at basically a list of URLs and will go out and download data and populate a cache for you.
So you register the things that you care about.
Yes.
And even before the user launches the app, it's going back and doing prefetching. I didn't even know.
It's actually called prefetch.
Oh, it is called prefetch.
Yeah. So it's actually really easy to use.
Yeah.
And so one of those things, there's so many APIs that sometimes it's hard to find ones that, you know, unless you know to search for prefetching, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I would recommend that go ahead and do that. We'll put the link here. But that's Larry. Larry's the guy who implemented that.
That's
at
awesome.
Least the first version.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see more people using it because it means app is fresh before you've ever run
it. Yeah, that's cool. That's a great thing. Well, Charles, thanks for being on the show. We
learned
a lot. And we'll see you next week.